This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publicize your book. And there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
In the study of religion, there are various camps that each approach their subjects in unique ways. Each method is shaped by particular interpretive choices, such as to be objectively neutral, experientially invested, or use scientific measures, for example. Whatever strategy one uses, there is a relationship between one's social identity and the categories shaping theoretical and methodological assumptions. This is what Christopher Driscoll and Monica Miller argue in their new book, Method as Identity: Manufacturing Distance in the Academic Study of Religion. These dynamics can be witnessed when thinking about how the boundaries of methodological practice are defined in the so-called critical study of religion versus something like the study of Black religion, where there is often an assumed identity-interested motivation to analysis. Driscoll and Miller produce a generative set of inquiries that require researchers to consider the role of race and social identity and how that informs their interpretive stance. In our conversation, we discuss questions of the whiteness of certain methods, the function of the designation Black in Black religion, the 1958 meeting of the International Association for the History of Religions, pioneer scholar Charles Long and the Chicago School of History of Religions, the relationship between the categories race and religion, hip-hop, and the productive role of writing in tension. I'm one of your co-hosts, Christian Peterson, and thanks again for listening to New Books in Religion, a channel on the New Books Network. What follows is my conversation with Monica Miller and Christopher Driscoll about their great new book, Method as Identity, Manufacturing Distance in the Academic Study of Religion, published with Lexington in 2018.
Welcome back, y'all. Thanks for joining me again on New Books in Religion. How are you guys?
Doing well, Christian. Thank you so much for having us on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's good to be back with you.
Now, some listeners may remember that I spoke with Monica and Chris on two different episodes in the past, so maybe a more formal introduction will be found there. And especially in the context of your guys' book, this whole idea of kind of biography and intellectual trajectory, I think, takes on new meaning that I haven't thought about in doing these conversations before. So perhaps right now, instead of kind of giving us a complete kind of history of where you guys have come from and these kind of things, maybe just tell us a little bit about your work and then let us know how you guys connected in your kind of scholarly interests and concerns. What interest in the study of religion did you share, for example?
Great question. I guess really it kind of begins framing it in the way that you did it. It begins with the creation of our group at the AAR, or our program unit now, the Critical Approaches to Hip Hop and Religion. Monica and I were, and I'm sure she'll have a bunch more to say on this, but we were a good decade ago, we were frustrated because the sorts of interests, for lack of a better framing, that we had and that we shared based on our interest in hip hop didn't really have a proper home, so to speak, in the AAR. So, for instance, if we wanted to do work on hip hop, it was widely presumed and assumed by any number of folks involved or in discussion with us that it was a particular domain. It belonged, that cultural stuff of hip hop belonged to a particular wing of the AAR, so to speak. And that wing being Black theology in a nutshell. And
or Black religious studies.
Mm-hmm. And we really wanted to carve out space for critically interrogating the tools that that we use in the study of religion. I guess, Monica, you want to?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to start the conversation. I think that's exactly right. And in particular, what we were really interested in sort of doing and showing and highlighting was the manner in which we were after a more critically oriented approach to the study of hip hop and religion. And so that is to say, the predominant sort of approach in terms of the way that scholars were treating the data of hip hop, or treating even the data as it concerns the category of religion, would sort of be situated within a more phenomenological kind of frame. So the question always sort of surrounding, like, what is religious about hip hop culture? And we were sort of interested to get our heads around what the uses of religion or the uses of hip hop would end up accomplishing for social formation and process. And so it wasn't technically Black religious studies, although the data was racialized or colored, no pun intended. We wanted our own separate space to kind of really explore what a critical approach to the study of hip hop and religion would look like. And so that is to say, we were most interested in bringing, you know, rich and dynamic approaches, or highlighting the range of approaches that were beginning to emerge around the study of religion and hip hop. And so it's been a really interesting venture and feat over the last number of years. We've seen the development of what we could probably call, I would say, and Chris, you might chime in on this point, a really a critically oriented approach to the study of the topic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we were and are really still sold on a critical approach to our data. It is effective. The turn that we kind of focused our lens on in the book, in Method as Identity, is not something that we want to do away with by any stretch of the imagination. It has in so many ways been liberating for us and for the study of hip hop culture within the scope or the parameters cast by the Academy of Religion. And so at that said, we wanted to interrogate what those limits would be, why they emerge, how they emerge. And that's really the start of what becomes Method as Identity. And we talk about it more in the book itself. But yeah, it's not an exaggeration to say that our fairly narrow interest in hip hop culture sparked these fairly cumbersome questions about method and how they connect to identity and things like that.
Yeah. Right. And I think for me, Christian and Chris, for me, you know, I really started out by kind of questing for that category of meaning in the study of hip hop. And so in the beginning, you know, in the beginning, when I was working on my dissertation, it was specifically looking at the different, what I would call then the meaning-making dimensions of hip hop. And about 150 pages into the project, I had this methodological kind of crisis, not only for the data of hip hop, but for my larger study. And so I can see my work kind of transgressing and moving from the apprehension of meaning to the troubling of meaning, to looking at uses and functions rather than meaning-making sorts of sensibilities, and then that moving into the study of social formation and process or identity studies. And that's largely where my work centers now, whether that is humanism or whether that's looking at just social difference in identity, the ways in which identity is made and broken and transgressed and or reconstructed. We brought that to the topic of theory and method. And so I'm still obviously firmly rooted in the study of Black religion, new Black religious movements. But my larger questions entail, and I think this is what Chris and I share in common, although our data sets are quite different, we share a connection with hip hop, but Chris being more rooted in critical studies of whiteness and myself being more rooted in Black religion studies, we share a common interest in identity studies. And that's what really brings together method as identity, manufacturing distance in the academic study of religion. And, you know, kind of going back to something Chris talked about, you know, regarding the ways in which hip hop studies has often been relegated to either just Black studies or Black religion or African American religion. There was a particular kind of segregation in the field of study that we felt we wanted to kind of really traverse and transgress at the same time by bringing these two things together. And I definitely, compared to Chris, I'm definitely more steeped in a critical approach to the study of religion and or identity. Chris tends to be more of an existentialist. And so we found ourselves productively in tension a lot of the times, despite our data set, and still productively in tension regarding just how we handle theory and method and identity or hip hop or whiteness or humanism. But we felt what would be really interesting was to bring that tension together and to use the tension to kind of push back on one another, but to do it through a blended voice where then the author, where the readers wouldn't be able to kind of say, here's the white voice, here's the Black voice, here's the female voice, here's the male voice, right? It kind of suspends any attempt to try to, you know, locate the kind of who is speaking here so that the effect of what's being said jumps out more than the who.
Yeah, that's real interesting too. So this it's a complex project you're doing here. And, you know, a lot of listeners might be kind of familiar with one domain of the study of religion or another. But it might be helpful to just kind of, start slow and thinking about at least these two central concepts that you're kind of using to frame the project, this idea of method and then this category of identity. So just so everybody's on the same page, how are you using these terms for the project, and what do you see as their relationship?
That's an excellent question, Christian. The fact that we don't really have clearly defined parameters around what is method, what is theory, what is identity is precisely some of the discursive confusion that brings this project together. Mm-hmm. And so starting off in a basic sense, for my part, my contribution to the book, I was thinking with Black religious studies or with diaspora studies and trying to think a little more specifically about the way that method tends to be handled in the study of Black religions, and that method is largely phenomenological. It's largely more essentialized. Mm-hmm. And identity tends to track kind of according to this tripartite method where Black bodies are treated as, you know, objects of history, and then the movement from going, you know, from object of history to subject of history is sort of charted in, I would say, in a very Eliotian kind of fashion. And it really, you know, assumes a kind of linear approach to the study of identity. And I wanted to not only think about identity in a more deconstructive sense, but I wanted to think about what is at play and what is at work when we reconstruct the Black subject as well, and what's happening to those white subjects as we're reconstructing, you know, Black subjects. And so for me, you know, the fact that we usually only tend to reach back to maybe a few authors when we're talking about method in the study of Black religion. The one obvious one we tend to go to is our go-to, you know, scholar author is Charles Long in Significations. And so the fact that there's not yet really a vigorous and lively kind of conversation and debate in Black religious studies about method, and really less so about theory, I wanted to kind of bring my own training and critical approaches to method and theory to kind of bear on Black religious studies. And so some of my questions really come out of my deep concern for and affirmation of and indebtedness to, you know, the field of Black religion, but also being trained in a more critical kind of fashion. I mean, for me, I think the critical approach goes back quite a long time. When I was speaking earlier about this methodological crisis that I had when I was working on my dissertation, it was the work of Russell McCutcheon that really spoke to me in the middle of that dissertation project. He was not only gracious and kind enough to speak with me during that time and to stay in communication with me, but his work really had quite a big effect on me, and it was palpable and really powerful, and it made a lot of sense to me that if we can, you know, stop privileging these categories, we are able to kind of look at what their uses and functions kind of accomplish for these competing social and cultural interests. And so for me, my critical approach in terms of how I understand it, how I apply it, kind of begins with McCutcheon's work. And then I was able to kind of backtrack and realize that there's this kind of William Jamesian, Eliotian kind of impulse, a kind of interiorized impulse that is being, you know, that the scholar is seeking after or questing after, and that thing they're calling meaning that kind of bubbles over that excess of Black religious studies. And so for me, it's an experiment to kind of put them all together and to see how do they speak to one another, but how does the field speak back to itself at the same time. And so I kind of come to this project with the double concerns of not only Black religious studies and how identity and the subject or Black subject formation is treated, but on the other hand, I noticed that when I would take up particular case studies in the critical approach to the study of religion, that my the identity of my data tended to become homogenized in a particular way. And when I stepped back, I said, wow, why is it that all of my data, when I'm doing critically oriented work, tends to be segregated from the very theory and method that I'm using? And so it's this sort of discursive confusion almost, and a kind of cognitive dissonance at the same time that I really bring to the project.
Yeah, just to add on to that, in my case, my work toes the line between having fairly sustained interest in Black Africana religions as well, but in recognizing that my kind of epistemological, to say nothing of ethical, responsibility to that discourse or those discourses involves figuring out ways to take them seriously as challenges to whatever sort of hegemonic postures are reigning supreme, either in the social world or even inside my own head, in the case of my own work, some of it. And so really, my interest in this can be initially framed in terms of being curious about how power is or is not implicated in questions of method. How do we do something in the field? How do we handle our data? Who's telling us how to handle our data? Regardless of the specific concerns about whether what we're hearing might be accurate or not, like what are the stakes involved in that particular admonition or a set of admonitions? And so that kind of forces a consideration of experience in a way that that the critical approach rightly suggests we ought be reticent to easily accept or easily adopt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the person, though, who, and this is one thing that really comes through in the book, I think, the person who's probably best responsible for having those sorts of conversations to date, at least in my opinion, is Charles Long. Jonathan Z. Smith certainly was interested in similar things, and those two figures had conversations together at times. I mean, they were colleagues for a period, things like that. But really, my interest in the project narrowed, I started to increasingly want to do justice to how I could to the work of Long, in particular, how he was thinking about and theorizing American religion as orientation. And so, like, in thinking about this theme, this heuristic or this figural representation of religion as orientation, it had us start to consider, I don't know, the old idea of map can come up, but for us, it wasn't so much about map or territory. It was more about thinking about how we're all sort of forced into a social situation where we're always already at certain distances from one another, as well as from our, here comes a piece of my existential concerns, as well as from our obligations to ourselves. I mean, like, issues of authenticity are, on the one hand, manufactured, but on the other hand, are the stuff that we have to attend to if we're looking at certain communities, not every community, but certain communities. And so,
and just to kind of add on to what you're saying, Chris, you know, you talk about J.Z. Smith and Charles Long, you know, kind of being colleagues and having these conversations together. And that's one of the things that we especially want to emphasize to listeners is that, you know, Charles Long is only taken up in a particular camp within the field of religion studies. And J.Z. Smith is taken up among a different kind of camp in religious studies. So although they were in conversation together, the way that the work looks actually, it again goes back to that kind of discursive segregation that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And so we even notice, again, this is not a critique of what other people are doing. This is Chris and I having conversations quite literally about, certain kind of discursive habits we were forming ourselves. So why is it that when I write about Black religion, I'm going to pick Charles Long and he's going to be my methodologist, but when I'm doing, you know, critically oriented stuff, I'm going to do the J.Z. Smith and the Bruce Lincoln, and, you know, I'm going to do the go-tos for that. But yet the data on the latter part looks quite Black, and I'm making examples of particular essentialized sorts of practices or subject formations, or, you know, different kind of cartographical shifts that might be happening. And then in the former, my data and my method both look just black, right? And so Chris and I started having these really dynamic kinds of conversations about, like, why is there this larger discursive segregation in terms of who is considered a methodologist, who is considered a theorist? Why is it that we have certain citation practices when we're taking up certain topics and certain kinds of ways? And when we're doing a more critical approach, our theory and method tends to look a bit white, or actually quite white. But yet when we're, you know, doing a critical kind of approach with, you know, Black religion or within Black religion, you know, our only go-to person tends to be Charles Long, among a few other folk. And we wanted to think about that kind of a certain kind of, you know, miscegenation almost in a way, right, Chris? I mean, yeah. We wanted to kind of bring those worlds together, and we wanted to figure out why in the mainstream, you know, predominant approach to both, that is Black religion, whether it's white religion, whether it's theory and method in the study of academics, you know, among academics and for academics, why is it that, you know, the citations and the data, all of these things tend to become homogenized in a certain way, but yet when we take other data out and put other data back in, we're right back in a certain kind of essentialized homogenization. And so really on a very practical and basic level, we were interested in the who and the what, like who gets to be the methodologist, what gets to be the data, what's chosen as the data, why is X, Y, and Z only the data and never the method? What is the category and role of experience? Like, what is the role of experience? Is it possible to bracket that experience out? You know, as someone trained in a critical approach, you know, I'm trained to say that I'm not after experience, and that experiential reality is bracketed by a certain kind of methodological approach or apprehension, right? And so Chris will come along and be like, oh, no, no, that's not possible. It's experience all the way down.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot here, guys. we're definitely not going to be able to talk a lot of the details here in this book. So listeners, be warned that you're just going to have to go and buy this book.
Which is out on paperback or in paperback.
Yeah, just came out in paperback. That's great. Yeah. Congrats.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So if I'm reading the book correctly, I think one of the main arguments is that this relationship between identity and the categories that shape theoretical and methodological assumptions kind of co-constitute each other. Mm-hmm. So you use a lot of examples, and you kind of talk more about the kind of genealogy of how the project progressed. And you've already kind of alluded to some of this, right? Ideas about what the critical study of religion is, like what are the boundaries of that? What does that mean exactly? Mm-hmm. In the book, you also talk about the scientific study of religion, which seems to have different kind of sets of assumptions rooted in different types of identities. You talked earlier about ideas about...
Can I just say, Christian, I'm sorry to interrupt your question, but no, the fact that you just made that distinction makes us so incredibly happy, and it's so important that we start off in a way, we have, you know, this experience with Don Wiebe, you know, who you know, would like to see the academic study of religion develop as a science. You know, he's got his shtick, his thing. And our critiques of Wiebe were read as critiques of the critical approach, but not only Wiebe, you know, the other kinds of critiques that we might levy against scientific approaches. The fact that you were just able to make that distinction between critical and scientific, and not sort of assuming that one is always the other makes us so happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just following your lead. So maybe for those who haven't read the book, kind of parsing out these different approaches or methods, right? And you also talked about kind of the Black religion as a field that has a certain set of kind of methodological assumptions going along with it. How do you, because it seems like the argument of the book is that method is established through these kind of positionalities, which are often kind of coded or demarcated as being objective or kind of outside of experience or identity. How is method established in the study of religion from your guys' take?
Right. I think an example that we bring into the book, thanks to Long's newer volume, the one that was published just a couple years ago, in Ellipsis, he tells the story of how it was that he came to be a historian of religion. And so this is what I'm about to say is about kind of like one half of the concerns that we wanted to emphasize in the book. So for us, method reveals identity, but identity also has an impact on methodological choice. These are not axiomatic insofar as to be X in the social world doesn't mean that you will necessarily be this or use Y method in your professional career or anything, but there were tendencies. So you could think of the book as a tendential theory of the relationship between method and identity. Now, so to get to the Long example, so Long was at the University of Chicago, as many listeners surely know, and he was initially kind of pigeonholed as necessarily having theological ambitions. Why was this so? Well, to hear him tell the story, it could be boiled down to his body, how he carried himself in the space of the divinity school, and how folks were making assumptions about what kind of meanings were attached, the significations that were at work in his interactions with his colleagues. So he one day was walking through the office, Manly Hall, I believe it was, and he bumps into Joaquin Wock. And Wock starts asking him in a real kind of even-handed but interested way, what are you up to? What are your interests, et cetera, et cetera? And they have this conversation that allows Long to recognize that something about the phenomenological approach, as Wock understood it at the time, provided space for him to study from the standpoint of what he already understood to be the proper object of our investigations. He had already come to realize that he was a Black man studying in religion Wissenschaft, the history of religions, and he recognized that all of the data, he couldn't turn his head in any direction and see the folks around him doing anything but being preoccupied in folks that looked like him.
Right.
And this provided, it provided a whole panoply of ideas for him, but how Long was able to kind of breathe within that space was through Wock's emphasis that there was something about the category of experience that would be the methodological foundation for the field, which that's something that we can still debate, of course. The important thing is not championing Wock's perspective here, but it's in seeing that for Long, method and identity had an integral relationship. And then, so that's one anecdote.
And just to kind of add on to that, Chris, I mean, what the story that you just recounted, you know, Christian, we talk about this like in the preface early on in the book about, you know, how we were having these experiences, not paranormal ones, but we were having real experiences, right? You know, whether it was the fact that we had upset, you know, a large constituent of the critical approaches to hip hop and religion when we have our first respondent as Russell McCutcheon come, and he gives this brilliant response, you know, titled "I Have a Hunch," and you know, if you're on the critical side, you know, you loved it, and he was giving these kind of experiential sorts of nods to the sui generis by way of the phenomenological. But
it was a brilliant, brilliant article.
Incredibly, it's so brilliant. Not only the wordplay, right, but it's it really speaks to this trademark brilliance that I think McCutcheon really holds. So if you're on the critical side, you loved it. But if you were on a more phenomenologically situated side of Black religion, where particular categories such as experience or such as authenticity or such as standpoint, you know, matter and matter a great deal, then you were going to be upset. And it's not that the folk in the crowd did not get it. They got it actually quite well. But what we learned from that experience was the feedback that we got and the reticence that we received as a result of McCutcheon being the respondent had much more to do with the identity of the respondent versus the racialization of the data that the group takes up itself. And so it was like we had broken some kind of identity, based assumption that really put, folk of color at odds with what Chris and I were up to. So in that regard, we're trying to defend, you know, why we had a particular respondent, you know, on this panel for, you know, the first panel and for the first opening of this big group, you know, that we've started, the first ever group on hip hop in the American Academy of Religion. And here we break some kind of cardinal rule that we ourselves aren't even privy to. Chris was, I think, a little more privy to it than I was, but I'm like, what did we do wrong? You know, where did we go wrong? What did we do wrong? But all of that to say, as we mentioned in the preface, it really, really animated kind of who would say what to whom in the academic study of religion, or who can say what about what in the academic study of religion. And so we took that as part of our own critical mandate in a way, to kind of think about critical approaches to hip hop in religion, you know, as a space that would bring together these interventions, but would also be a space of experimenting with breaking rules and, you know, what happens when we critique, what happens when we deconstruct without reconstructing, you know. So all of that to say that that becomes this, you know, method as identity really begins kind of in that moment. But then turning to 2015, when we're at the International Association for the History of Religions Congress, that was in Erfurt, Germany, Chris and I had actually co-authored the proposal that we gave there for method as identity. It had been accepted. And so we get there and we were actually arguing for a critical approach. But in our arguing for a critical approach, Don Wiebe, who we shared space with on the panel, it was a great pleasure and privilege for us to meet him in the flesh and to think with him. But he was very abrasive with us and saw us as either doing something that was way less critical than what we actually thought we were being because of the racialization of our data, or seeing us as being a part of Black religion and not having any kind of permission to do anything around a critical kind of approach. So that, you know, this book project, you know, what became Method as Identity really begins to kind of boil in these two alchemical kind of experiences that we have and then that we continue to have. And that's when we decided together, we said, you know, we've got to keep the critical approach critical. So if we don't ask hard questions of the critical approach, there's a way that it'll end up falling flat, or we will fall prey to the very things that we're critiquing. And on the other hand, we have a commitment to our own primary areas of study, Black religion, critical whiteness studies, to kind of keep those areas as critical as they can, but also as for both of those areas, as honest as they're, you know, as honest as they can be. And so we then take that debate up among both of ourselves to kind of, you know, take to task in a way those two areas, but also to develop them as well.
Yeah, I guess readers can think of the book as what we hope to be a series of conversation starters, essentially. Is this sorts of, while a space like Nassar does an absolutely brilliant and vital job of focusing our attention on particular frames for thinking with and about social identity, and then also different, as Jean-François Bayard has been so often quoted, these operational acts of identification, that it's absolutely imperative. I guess what's missing, though, is a serious consideration of the impact of what these identity-based studies have offered in the way of shifts in the discourse. So we're not suggesting that folks aren't invited or anything like that, that these are somehow socially segregated spaces, so much as have we taken stock of how a variety of different areas. For us, the case study, the running case study, is Africana religions or African-American religion, however you want to frame it. Like, have we collectively done the reflexive critical work of seeing how is it that these discourses are reshaping our professional identities? How, like, what is that relationship? And that's really framed in those terms. I don't know if Monica or I have really found a space outside of the critical approaches to hip hop group where we're kind of forcing those sorts of conversations. Like, it's one thing to provide space for historically marginalized populations to join and start their own discourses and things like that. But I mean, like, what's really been going on over the last decades as historically marginalized people, persons, have increasingly entered into the halls of academia? Like, what and how has the academy, particularly the AAR and the IAHR, how have they organized themselves? And the counterpoint to the long example or anecdote is that this is not a matter of historically marginalized persons making a forceful insertion of identity into or onto method. That is something that happens, and there's a whole lot we can say about that, but there's a historical precedent for this tendency to conflate or confuse the two. And so in the book, we turn to an example of that from a series of articles and rejoinders that are held in Newman, the professional journal for the IAHR. And they're responding in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s to what had been a World Congress that was held in Tokyo that year. And we were looking for historical precedents for when these methodological crises happened. And it seemed to us that this moment in time was a clear example of the stakes involved. So these white Western men, basically, went over to Tokyo in 1958 at sort of the behest of UNESCO. The UNESCO paid for this, or paid a big chunk of this particular Congress. And the goal of it was to basically learn how to live together, right? Like, this is a post-war moment where folks are still thinking never again about fascism, national socialism, things of that sort. And so it was kind of UNESCO's goal to have us thinking about how we live together without killing one another. So, and I don't mean to sound flippant, but I mean, that was really the goal. And the some effect for white Western scholars was they went over there thinking that they were the ones who were the authorities on these discourses, particularly Shintoism, but there were examples of how this played out in terms of Buddhism and other things, where empirical other, the historically empirical other, as Long would say, were for the first time seen as the experts. And this created a crisis of identity that we show. We bear this out by turning to the journal articles in Newman. And what it points to is that the thing that we've been sold as a concern to maintain this detached posture of method away from social identity, that the only way that we can navigate the complicated waters of social identification in our work is to do this kind of critical distancing, that critical distancing was born out of a concern to reinforce the authority of the white Western scholar of the middle 20th century in the face of folks who had a whole bunch of insider information that these white Western men had never had to really reckon with. And so that's the counterpoint, or the historical precedent, or one of them, for the relationship between method and identity. So,
right. To kind of build on that, also, this idea of, for example, the category of experience. So if Black religion studies is not critical, if there are more phenomenologically oriented, or take up religion, Black religion, as a kind of subjective sort of orientation, they're either being overly critical and doing the very thing that we critique them for and saying they're too phenomenological. And that is, the fact that they are studying themselves, right? That there's this attachment to the data. So the identity of the data matches the identity of the scholar. And if we take description to be thin as it is, then, as thin, no longer thick description, what we're doing at best is studying ourselves, right? And so the flip side of what Chris is talking about is that in Black religion studies, Black religious studies or African-American religion, if I say they're not critical, that means that they're at best studying themselves and they're being good critics of themselves and of the data that they're studying, or they're overly phenomenological, right? But not by their own making, right? So what role do I as a critical scholar play in the over phenomenologizing or phenomenologicalizing, right, of the field, where they're kind of stuck in a catch-22? That is to say, they're relegated to studying the identity that matches their own subjective identity, or at best they're doing standpoint theory, or at the least, they're trying to be critically oriented, but they're not necessarily making any distinctions of distance between themselves and the data that they're actually taking up. And so again, going back to this sort of discursive kind of confusion that brings this project together, and that really brought Chris's voice together with mine, is to say, how did the methodologist become the methodologist? Like, how did method become method? Is Foucault as critical as we're making him out to be? Is Durkheim as critical as we're making him out to be? Is the critique of the phenomenology, in Black religion, for example, or in Black studies, I would say, more specifically, is that critique actually something that is well positioned? Is the posture of the critique well situated, right? Is the critique that, they're too close to their data actually space that is not afforded to them to actually have distance from their data through the presumptions and assumptions of their own identity based subjectivity matching with the data that they're studying? So in other words, to state that more plainly, are we giving space to gender studies? Are we giving space to Black studies to actually procure a particular kind of critically oriented methodology, or we're assuming that at best they can only study themselves, which if we take our own critical method, if we take J.Z. Smith seriously, then at the end of the day, all we're doing is studying ourselves anyway. So why the over critique of the category of experience or the hyper critique, right, of something like standpoint, when at the end of the day, you know, we're studying data, but we're working out who we are. And isn't to then experience wrapped up in that project?
No.
Now, so this has been in kind of the background of what you guys have been saying here throughout our conversation and throughout the book, but in a couple of places you kind of address this specifically. You have one chapter with this great title, What is Black About Black mm-hmm. Religious Studies? And then so there and in the following chapter and some places elsewhere, we're talking or you're talking a little bit about this idea of the designation black or these categories of blackness and then the corollary of whiteness. Which we haven't talked much about here, but whiteness is often kind of the presumed normativity mm-hmm. that is projected through kind of a scientific or a critical study, right? Is that it's objective and detached. Mm-hmm. Help us think about these kind of racialized categories and how they kind of are underlying a lot of the conversation that we've been having here about method and these kind of different domains of methods.
Right. So, thanks for the question, Christian. That chapter, What is Black About Black Religious Studies and Thinking About Diaspora and, you know, Maintenance in the Field, comes out of a personal frustration that, you know, I had a tendency of sort of feeling over the years, but a frustration that was kind of building in a productive kind of capacity, which is to say, and it's a simple one, which is to say, why the designator black, right? If religion is the study of identity and of identity formation, and if at best we're only really studying ourselves at the end of the day, which is to say that we're not as far away from experience as we tend to assume, then why that designator black? What is black then, right, about black religious studies? And I would often ask students in the beginning of the semester, I would say, well, this course is, you know, Introduction to Black Religions and Hip Hop. I would say to them, if this course were just titled Religion and Hip Hop, right, or Introduction to Religion and Hip Hop, would you come into the class assuming that we would be studying Black religion all semester, or would you be surprised by that prospect? And they said they'd absolutely be surprised, right? And so it's almost as if the identity-based position is forced into a discursive situation of always having to be foregrounded, mm-hmm. whereas the white position, that position of normativity, gets to be free-floating and unmoored. Right, it gets to kind of operate in a metaphysical kind of capacity. We get to just say religion. Welcome to the introduction to religion, or welcome to, you know, religion and sports, for example. And so Chris and I would often have these conversations about how I have to foreground certain kinds of things, or gender studies has to foreground, or queer theory or queer studies has to foreground. But yet when we're talking about straight white men, their identity gets to sort of, you know, as I said, be this free-floating kind of designator where we know it's there, right? But we don't necessarily always say it. And we don't have to say it because it's already assumed and kind of presumed in the designator that's being used. So I would say that frustration, plus also our observation, as Chris mentioned a little while ago, in the story that he was telling about Newman, what I was also thinking about, Christian, it was just kind of a thought experiment in a way, which was like, why you know, we talk about Black religion as being a subfield of the field of religion, a little, you know, area of religion that's kind of segregated into itself, a burgeoning area of study. But if, like Charles Long said, you know, if the data has always looked like myself or look like me, then that means we've been doing Black religion all along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a point that we try and pull out and focus on in the book. But I guess to go back, thinking about whiteness specifically, like what sorts of interventions are made possible by our citing of whiteness, which we do a number of times in the text. It's, by my estimation, it's the only book I know of in our field that puts method and whiteness specifically together. But the reason was kind of born out of necessity, because you're talking about as these discourses unfold in the field, you've got a camp offering to organize the parameters of all of the other camps. So that sort of relationship to other people, not the other necessarily, but just to other people in general, that has a historical precedent. I mean, the idea of whiteness helps us to think about how authority is functioning as it concerns these conversations. How are we going to be scholars of religion in the 21st century? I mean, one thing we haven't noted here, and we don't have to get into it for the sake of time and other things, is this book is being colored by Monica and I learning how to be young scholars in the field. And so quite literally, there are a politics of the field that are at work that shape the possibilities for all of us, but in different ways. And so how is it that we can talk in terms of whiteness or Blackness being these discursively constructed floating signifiers at best, but then have those things make a real impact on our the sorts of expectations that hiring committees will be having during job interviews, for instance? Mm-hmm. Like, how is it that we're navigating that space? For instance, there may be, I haven't looked at the numbers, but there's definitely an assumption that historically marginalized folks have an easier time on the job market than white men. I've heard it in countless areas and spaces. I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying it exists. On the flip side, though, within those job listings, what's the sort of posture that one is that is hoped for by lots of these hiring committees? So you can do theory and method, particularly if you could do it from this critical posture. So what is complex set of significations are at work in that environment? And I mean, it can be maddening for folks for a number of different reasons. But I mean, the whiteness thing, though, it really offers a way, a clumsy at times way. I mean, whiteness as the idea, as an analytic, a lot of people don't like it because it's uncomfortable, because white folks, we have not had to situate ourselves as a group, quite frankly. And that's what
I think that goes back to that, you know, that question that we were sort of asking as a thread, you know, throughout the book, Chris, which is like, what makes a methodologist a methodologist? Hmm. Like, how is it, you know, that certain individuals and certain identities come to be understood as method? What we realized, Christian, was that not the fact of them necessarily being as disconnected from their data, right? But that the methodologist is cataloged according to the difference produced between the difference of the identity of the scholar and the identity of the data itself. And so that difference produces an illusion of distance. So in other words, that's why...
that's our thesis.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why, you mm-hmm. know, when Charles Long says, you know, why does all the data look like me? It's because a serious comparativist, right, will take up a data set that looks different than who they purport to be, right? One will take an interest in something that's foreign and exotic. And not to say we haven't moved away from a certain kind of ethnological kind of model or approach. Like, we've certainly come a long way in that regard. But the illusion of distance is something that we wanted to kind of play with. And so by that accord, Black religion, going back to what is Black about Black religion, they will never get the opportunity to be critical. We will never get the opportunity in Black religion to be critical, right? Because we, those in that study Black religion, are overwhelmingly the same identity, right? Of their, the same, they share a similar kind of identity between themselves and the data that they take up. And so if the illusion of distance necessitates a certain kind of posture that one would then come to be called critical, it just means that then Black religious studies is sort of already X'd out.
What Monica's describing, though, creates like a schizoid social environment wherein one aspect of this career, this profession, is telling these folks to act a certain way to gain these particular tools if you want a job, but then another side of the profession or career is saying, no, those are the things that are going to ensure that you're never respected. Like, that's a mind fuck, if you pardon the expression. And that's something that, again, like, folks have had these sorts of conversations for a long time over drinks at AAR and things like that. But we need to pull the rug off of this. I mean, we need to have these hard conversations. I mean, for instance, the distance that Monica's describing and that we talk about extensively in the book, I mean, it's manufactured is an understatement of epic proportions. It's predicated on an artificial notion of the primitive other, the primitive subject. The idea of primitivity in and of itself is a theological idea of which the work of Durkheim and countless other functionalists emerge, based on a theological presumption of the superiority of some of us to the inferiority of others of us. And this is not to play politics or to infuse politics in the stuff that we do in the study of religion. What Monica and I are arguing, and we're not alone in this, Tomoko Masuzawa and others, Daniel DeBusin, like, there's a number of folks who are trying to do this work to show this, is our field in its inception has been predicated on this racialized assumption. And from that racialized assumption, we inherit these what we call critical postures, and that's something that needs to be interrogated.
And so there's critical, and then there's critical, right? And this is where Chris and I would sort of productively put together the tension. I would say, the work that, say, for example, McCutcheon and Stephen Ramey or members of Culture on the Edge are trying to do, is that work of measuring, that distance, to say, well, what is being perceived as distance is in fact an illusion. And, following very closely, Bayard, in so much that identity, is not just this thing, but, is in fact is represented by and representative of these operational acts, I think gets us closer to the reality that we're studying ourselves at the end of the day. And if most of the scholars are white and we're studying ourselves, then we can call it a white kind of discourse, right? Like, and I think that's the way we tend to think about the study of Black religion or the study of Black studies or the study of, gender studies. So for the sake of the book, we tend to homogenize, although we try to, in certain areas, kind of parse out what we mean by critical and the old guard of critical, the new guard of critical. This really, is a book project that attempts to keep critical critical, which is to say, more plainly, how do we know when something, just like we're saying, how do we know when something is method or when something is theory? How do we know when the methodologist has arrived on the scene or the theorist has arrived on the scene? We're also asking, how do we know when something's critical and when it's not critical? Mm-hmm. If we do see something productive in the critical approach, then the only way to keep critical, right, is to kind of ask hard questions of that very approach. And there seems, Christian, to be a kind of that big tent approach to theory and method. And in fact, one is often not unstated without the other. Right. Like we tend to not just say methodological dot, dot, dot. We tend to say like theory and method in so much as it actually represents a particular kind of identity stance. So we tend to use the designators method and theory as a kind of politic, if you will. Right. Where that tent is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And now everyone's doing theory and method, and we don't even have a good sense of what distinguishes method from theory. And now theory and method are kind of like peanut butter and jelly. Like they're kind of going together like peanut butter and jelly, you know, such that then that becomes a larger stand-in, right, for critical. So when someone says they do theory and method, we're assuming that they take a critical approach to their object of study, for example. And we wanted to sort of assess, if you will, how did we get to this point? Like, how did we get to this trend? You know, what are the professional ramifications, like Chris was just talking about? But even, you know, beyond professional ramifications, I would say that not only does this impact, you know, who gets what job and how certain jobs are positioned, right? What scholars are, you know, applying for what jobs. But it also speaks, I think, you know, a lot about like tenure, for example. Like that's a very practical professional concern, right? So if you're a critical scholar, you know, does your work go to the critical camp? Or if your data, like for, let's take Chris, for example, like is sure. Chris going to be analyzed by existentialists? Or is Chris going to be analyzed by, you know, mostly scholars in the study of Black religion?
This is terrifying me all of a sudden.
Right? And so these politics, Christian, are the things that we're interested in, like in a very practical level. You know, and I think this is important for listeners. I'm trying to think of practical things that one could take from what is otherwise a quite complex sort of theoretical kind of experiment that is the book. You know, what, like, how did we get to this point? Like, where did we start? How did we get here? You know, why are method and theory kind of going together like peanut butter and jelly? What does it mean to do method? Is that something that is still a productive concept to use? Or does the foregrounding of method actually foreground a certain kind of politic instead of, you know, does it foreground the who, but not necessarily the what?
Well, we have been talking for a while and there's so much more to the book. So, of course, people will have to read through it. And fortunately, I think it's the type of book that you can return to probably at various points and kind of reconsider the assumptions that you have at that very moment. So I hope people will read the book and continue to read the book as we move forward kind of with the discipline. We always kind of wrap these conversations up in thinking about what people are working on at the moment. And so that might be a kind of an interesting time to also reflect and now kind of writing this book, you know, going through kind of these experiential moments that you have that have kind of shaped your understanding of what method is. And if we are going to respond to the notion that method is an identity, where are you guys now? What types of questions are you asking? What type of, you know, subjects are you considering?
So we're still at work, Christian, in the collaborative project. Chris and I are currently working together on a book for Routledge, which is part of their Basics series. So Race and Religion, the Basics. And so here we get to kind of extend some of these larger questions that we didn't necessarily get to explore in Method as Identity, but also we get to, again, kind of perform a certain kind of discursive discontinuity between our voices, which we think will also serve as its own data in a certain way, right? So religion and race, if the study of race was always a part of religion, then, you know, is race already endemic to religion? Do we need to even separate race from religion? Is really the study of religion the study of race in a lot of ways? And so these are some of the questions that we're taking up in that project. And then
and we're doing it in a much more accessible fashion than this book ended up, than Method as Identity ended up.
Right. And so we hope that it's, you know, practical, that it will sort of chart out some professional, you know, not chart really, but to kind of, you know, sort of explore some of the professional ramifications and or consequences of thinking about religion and race. But, you know, we think that'll be a fruitful kind of collaboration in asking these questions. So part of it will be methodological and theoretical, but we also hope to really expand the data set as well.
And it'll be usable, like for the classroom. Mm-hmm. That's a priority.
Definitely a priority for us to make it usable in the classroom. And then kind of down the road collaboration is a handbook that Chris, myself, and Dr. Daniel White Hodge will be working on, which is a handbook for the study of hip hop and religion. And then for myself, lastly, you know, it's finishing New Black Gods and getting that off my plate, which has seen so many different instantiations. And I think the more I kind of think about theory and method, the more it's really pushing that project along, which was originally about looking, you know, at both sides of Black iconicity. And so what does it mean to think about an Obama and a Michael Brown at the same time, right? Or an Oprah, you know, and, you know, Renisha McBride at the same time. How is it that we can talk about Black excess, right, with so much Black loss? But for me, the way that that project is really taking shape and the way the roads that it's currently traveling is moving away from iconicity and kind of asking a larger question of how do we theorize Black religion really as the study of identity as such. And so I move away from the kind of figure approach to larger methodological and theoretical sorts of considerations by looking at a number of case studies and data sets.
Sounds good. Chris, are you working on anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, sure. I'm about to descend into a writing cave thanks to this crazy world that we're currently living in. I'm actually excited about the cave part of it, not the crazy world part of it. But I'm working on a book that should be out in about a year and a half. That's called White Devils, which is really a study of the relationship between appropriation in the sense of identity and codependency. It turns to psychology, psychoanalysis, to think through what our racialized relationships of responsibility involve. So it'll look at that, but it does so through thinking about the appropriation of, on the one hand, hip-hop culture by white masses of young people, but then on the other hand, trying to do so in a way that takes seriously a popular trope in Black esoteric traditions that situates the white man as the devil. Like, how is it, are those two, like, points of focus, are they connected? And I think they are. And so I'm trying to trying to tell the story of the white devil, but do so in a way that is useful for understanding how that story might operate, or how it comes about. So that's what I'll be focusing on.
These sound like great projects. I wish you luck, and I do hope that our forced writing time is short. But I do hope you guys have enough time to be productive in these great projects. So thanks for sharing that, and thanks for talking about this great book, Method as Identity.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, Chris. Yeah. Thank you so much for having us back, and we're always excited by what you produce, and you know, always keep our ear to the ground of what you're up to. So we appreciate you, and we thank you
very much. So, and thanks to everyone who listened. We're always up to talk about this sort of stuff. So just shoot us an email if anyone's interested.
Thanks for listening to New Books in Religion. That was my conversation with Christopher Driscoll and Monica Miller about Method as Identity: Manufacturing Distance in the Academic Study of Religion, published with Lexington in 2018.